The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
We've been working with vaccine manufacturers, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, to manufacture and purchase hundreds of millions of doses of these three safe, effective vaccines. And now, at the direction and with the assistance of my administration, Johnson & Johnson is working together with a competitor, Merck, to speed up and increase the capacity to manufacture new Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is one shot.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. Good to be here with you. That was the president. I caught his speech last night, his address to the American people regarding COVID-19 vaccines and his plan to, of course, help defeat this virus. He says we're on a war footing. I want to share something with you. You may not have seen it. You might have missed part of it. Maybe you chose not to listen to it. I don't want to torture you, but I think it's important that you at least hear some of what the president said. It's good to be here with you today. By the way, I want to say a giant thank you to everyone who has signed up for my book, too. I'll tell you more about that coming up in a little bit, but my brand new book is out on Divine Mercy, and if you missed the program yesterday, I'll fill you in on all the details of it, okay? More info at relevantradio.com if you want it. But yesterday, let's before we get to any of that, yesterday, right? The first anniversary of the World Health Organization declaring that the Wuhan virus, a world pandemic. And nobody calls it the Wuhan virus, right? You got the Legionnaires' disease, you got the Spanish flu. We know it came from that region of the world, right? So the WHO declared the Wuhan virus a worldwide pandemic 1 year ago yesterday. So the president marked that day as special, and he decided to address you and me, address the country on it, especially with the issue of the vaccines that have been developed. He told Americans in what is now his first primetime speech to the nation. He has yet to have a press conference, though. And Jake and I were just talking about this before we went into the studio. I heard one commentator yesterday say this is the longest time a president has not had a press conference in over a century. And Jake, open your mic. What were you just seeing on the ticker?
I was watching Fox News just a little bit ago. What I found interesting is that on the bottom part of their screen, they have like a sort of a tally of how many days it has been since President Biden has done any sort of press conference. So, I mean, yeah, they know their audience and, you know. Yeah. But it was interesting to see that.
Yeah, you know, that'll give pressure for the president. Because I think the White House press secretary has been getting some questions about when he's going to, you know, address the press. We'll see what happens. During his entire presidential campaign, just about everything he did was off a teleprompter. Questions were pre-selected from journalists for a lot of what went down. So, you know, again, like, he's our president. Let's pray for President Biden. Let's pray for him. If he's in cognitive decline or if there's some reason he doesn't want to do this, let's pray for him. I pray that he stays in office for 4 years and is healthy and gets, you know, that he brings the country in the right direction. We need to pray for conversion. We need to pray for good guardrails, if you will. Let's just pray against these erroneous decisions, policies, executive orders that he is championing. He did say something yesterday that got some people wondering. He told Americans that you got to get vaccinated. And if you do, and he talked about the numbers of how many people were being vaccinated, that you can be independent of the virus on July 4th. You can get together with your friends. You can get together with your family. Small gatherings, right? Some people said, who are you to tell me who I can gather with or how big that could be? I don't know. I don't think the president meant anything by it. You can sound off if you want, but he expressed his deep desire that every American get a vaccine. He sees light at the end of the tunnel.
I need you to get vaccinated when it's your turn and when you can find an opportunity. And to help your family, your friends, your neighbors get vaccinated as well. Because here's the point. If we do all this, if we do our part, if we do this together, by July the 4th, there's a good chance you, your families and friends will be able to get together in your backyard or in your neighborhood and have a cookout or a barbecue and celebrate Independence Day. That doesn't mean large events with lots of people together, but it does mean small groups will be able to get together. After this long, hard year, that will make this Independence Day something truly special, where we not only mark our independence as a nation, where we begin to mark our independence from this virus.
Amen, Mr. President. I hope that's indeed the case. I can't wait till COVID is behind us, that's for sure. The one takeaway I had, I was actually had the TV on, my wife was next to me, and she goes, everything is so negative. It's always so dark. It's about we're in a dark winter, or we're at a war with this virus, we're this and we're this. And look, I'm not here to throw stones at Joe Biden, but yeah, I've learned as a broadcaster, when I first got into radio, it's so easy to talk about the dark, the ugly, to champion and promote that, to create division. I try to light a candle. I try to give a moral perspective on a lot of the issues that affect you. I try to say, hey, here are the solutions. Here's what happens if we fail to respond according to the moral law. But fear-mongering has made so many people, you know, unsocial. And during his presidential campaign, it was so dark, yet he got elected. Now, with this whole COVID thing, it was kind of a dark address, too. I just, Mr. President, if you happen to be hearing this, I mean, for your own benefit for the nations, you know, let's light a candle. One candle can pierce the darkness, and 1,000 of them can banish it. So let's give hope. There's going to be brighter days ahead. I'm convinced of it. But you know, after promising last year that he was not going to lock down the country down again, remember when people asked him about, oh, will you lock the country down? The president said something last night about possibly shutting your businesses and locking America down again. Check this out.
Because even if we devote every resource we have, beating this virus and getting back to normal depends on national unity. And national unity isn't just how politics and politicians vote in Washington, what the loudest voices say on cable or online. Unity is what we do together as fellow Americans. Because if we don't stay vigilant and the conditions change, then we may have to reinstate restrictions to get back on track. And please, we don't want to do that again. We've made so much progress. This is not the time to let up. Just as we were emerging from a dark winter into a hopeful spring and summer is not the time to not stick with the rules. I'll close with this. We've lost so much over the last year. We've lost family and friends. We've lost businesses and dreams we spent years building. We've lost time, time with each other. And our children have lost so much time with their friends, time with their schools. No graduation ceremonies this spring. No graduations from college, high school, moving up ceremonies. You know, and there's something else we lost. We lost faith in whether our government and our democracy can deliver on really hard things for the American people.
All right, and it goes on. That's kind of to my point, wasn't it? I mean, everything's so dark, you know, so dark. We have to give props where it's due, and I'm glad he's passionate about this. This virus is terrible on so many different levels, from taking lives to affecting the economy, to threatening certain liberties. I mean, there's a lot that we can talk about here. Also, you've got to give credit to the previous administration. What was able to be done with these mRNA vaccines, you know, the rapidity, the lifting of some of these juggernauts, if you will, pretty amazing where we are today. So that's great. We're Americans. You know, this is the greatest nation in the history of the planet. I'm proud to call myself an American. And we will get through this. You know, the president touted the fact that, you know, if you're waiting for some time to try to get the vaccine, hope is finally here. You will be able to get it. He says every American's going to. In fact, but here's the problem, and I don't want to get into the whole morality of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. We've done a lot of that. I think they purchased another million J&J vaccines. I think he addressed that last night. I forget what the exact number was. But listen, here's the president touting the fact that, you know, vaccines are going to be yours at least by May.
Now, because all the work we've done, we'll have enough vaccine supply for all adults in America by the end of May. That's months ahead of schedule. And we're mobilizing thousands of vaccinators to put the vaccine in one's arm, calling active duty military, FEMA, retired doctors and nurses, administrators, and those to administer the shots. And we've been creating more places to get the shots. We've made it possible for you to get a vaccine at nearly any one of 10,000 pharmacies across the country. just like you get your flu shot.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. He did say, you know, they're going to have vaccinations available. But you can roll up in your car, pull up your sleeve, get your shot, and drive on your way. So, I mean, look, they're trying to strategize how to do this. Thank you, Patrick Alog. He's on my phones today. If you call in, you'll talk to him. It wasn't 1 million J&J vaccines, 100 million vaccinations, almost a third of the population in this country. So I will probably talk about this in the future, but, you know, you could take a look at what vaccine you may want to get. You know, there's Pfizer, Moderna, the J&J, AstraZeneca, Sanofi might be coming out. There's a lot of different choices. You may choose not to get one, but, you know, do your due diligence. And, you know, as the bishops have said, as Pope has said, you know, when it comes to the vaccinations too, also be considerate of your brother. We are our brother's keeper. All right. And I don't want to get on to the whole vaccine issue. We talked a lot about it. Like, I want to talk money for you. How's that sound, huh? You want a little cheddar, a little change? Here we go. $1,400 in your bank account by this weekend. Does that sound good? You like that number? The president signed the $2 trillion COVID-19 relief bill yesterday. And I saw a report this morning saying it could end up in your bank account as early as this week. That's just the first wave of checks. That's the first wave. The round of stimulus checks is $1,400 per eligible individual, and plus a $1,400 bonus per dependent. That's pretty good. That's going to be a big check, big payday. 159 million households are expected to receive a payment under this new deal. Listen to this good news from Yahoo.
Well, the good news of a bill being signed earlier is people are getting the checks a little bit earlier. We heard from the White House that people are getting those checks as early as this weekend. We saw a similar things with the last round of checks. By the time former President Trump signed the bill, 2 days later, Americans already got the checks. So similar thing will happen here. The eligibility criteria is pretty similar to the last round. The income thresholds this time are slightly lower. So a single filer making up to $75,000 would receive the full payment. Those making up to $80,000 would receive a reduced payment. For joint filers, similarly, $150,000 to get the full payment. Those making up to $160,000 would receive a smaller payment.
All right. So if you live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, your city just joined with its neighboring city in Somerville to officially recognize polyamory. All right, yeah, weird, right? Another story. You'll count your money. You live in these states. Strap on your seatbelts. The city council adopted language, and I have to share the story with you. I don't really want to dive into a whole lot of this, but this is something I've been. You know, if you listen to me a long time, and I hope you've been with me for a while, you're going to find that I try to not just look at what's unfolding in front of us. I like to look at what's happening down the road and around the bend. I like to say, if we take these actions, if we stray from the moral path, what will the consequences of that be? If we choose to plant bad seeds, what will the corrupt fruit of that be? This is one of it. I had said in 2015, when the Obergefell decision was made and marriage was redefined in this country, that you're going to see polyamory, you're going to see polygamy. Right? I've said that many, many times. And then from that, we have the ripple effect of challenges to our religious freedom and a whole litany of other things. Well, the city council adopted language. I want to share it with you. It says, it states that domestic partnership means the entity of two or more persons who meet the following criteria and jointly follow a registration form proclaiming that. So here is your criteria. You want to be a polygamist or be involved in a this is terrible, right? It says this. This is what their statement says. They are in a relationship of mutual support, caring, and commitment, and intended to remain in such a relationship. Two, they're not related by blood, closer than would bar marriage in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Three, they are not in a domestic partnership with others outside this partnership. Four, they're competent to contract. And five, they consider themselves to be a family. So there you go. Even though it's not polygamy, right? That's not polygamy. It's polyamory, right? It's close enough, and you can guess there will be people demanding sooner rather than later that it's not enough. They need to recognize marriage for these people. That's what's going to happen. Oh, well, you know, what do you mean? What about point number, three that said, they're not a domestic partnership? This is what happens. Once you crack open this door, that line gets moved. Oh, that'll never happen. This is all we want. You know, we saw what was predicted after the Supreme Court redefined marriage a few years ago, and we're beginning to see it now. So you mark my word again, all right? And we'll see what happens. On that note, let me just pause that for you. We're going to pray the chaplet in about 22 minutes. I do want to share something with you. I don't know if you were able to catch my broadcast yesterday. Every afternoon around 3 Central, I stop and I pray the chaplet of Divine Mercy. And I know you're busy. You know, you might have said, oh, Drew, I was doing this, or I was out of town. I had some friends that were away. I just got back. I got really good news. Something that has been a challenge for me for a very long time has finally been completed. I have been a devotee of Divine Mercy forever, and you know that. You know my deep love of the chaplet. You know my deep love of Divine Mercy. I was a former filmmaker, documentarian, really, and what I ended up doing was being contracted by an organization to shoot a documentary on the life of a humble nun in Poland. Her name was, you know, Faustina Kowalska. She was this venerable. She wasn't blessed. She wasn't a saint at the time. And I knew nothing about this. You know, I never heard of the devotion, to be honest with you. This is back probably 1993, I think it was, 92, something like that, 93, 4. What ended up happening was I dove into it, and I was so deeply touched by the message of mercy. You know, it's God's greatest attribute. The Lord told St. Faustina that no mind, be it human or angelic, will ever be able to fathom the depths of his mercy. Never, ever, ever be able to fathom it. It's one of the great mysteries of the afterlife. You and I really do believe this. You and I will not just sing God's praises, but we will praise him for his unfathomable mercy and really how unworthy we are. Mercy really is when love bends down and meets misery, when it restores dignity. That's what mercy is. And I'll tell you, I produced a documentary. It won several awards. And I thought that was the end of it. I just made mercy part of my own personal spirituality, you know, and my daughter almost drowned, and I turned to the Lord, and a miracle took place in that case. In fact, a little later in today's show, after the chaplet, there's a man whose child drowned in his pool. He's a physician. He'll share how Divine Mercy saved his child's life. And I began to really incorporate this message of mercy, and I came to Relevant Radio, and I encouraged them to begin spreading the devotion. We did. And the network came to me, and they said, hey, you know, we want you to write a book. And I said, you know, I really want to. I've got several book ideas in store. I said, I was going to do one on the moral vote, you know, as the elections were around. In fact, I was working on one to talk about the history of the vote in this country and how, you know, even outside of religion, just how moral principles and what our founding fathers saw gave us a framework to make a more perfect union. But, you know, I didn't get that done in time. So I said, you know what, let's promote mercy. And I wrote a book that will introduce you to God's divine mercy in a powerful way. It will introduce you to the life of St. Faustina, to her spiritual director, who's so critical in all of this. He's such a hero of mine. You'll learn about the power of the chaplet, how it came to be, and the promises that were given. You will learn about the image of Divine Mercy. There's special graces that come with this image. There's even a connection to the Shroud of Turin. That's in the book. You'll learn about the Hour of Mercy, which is seldom talked about, but there are extraordinary promises that the Lord gave to us if we meditate on his passion during that hour. The Feast of Mercy. Faustina saw the seven chambers of hell, and she said there were many more, but she wrote about what she saw. She saw the Passion of our Lord. She was given glimpses of heaven and hell. She had a Trinitarian experience. I mean, this is unbelievable. I had to contain this to about 140 pages. I could have probably went 440, and that's the battle, right? Because I've done nothing but talk about Divine Mercy for years. What I put in this book is a powerful tool and a powerful weapon, and it's yours free. I want you to have it, okay? This is the deal. It came out yesterday in the Hour of Mercy. It's yours today, absolutely free. No strings attached. You can get it right now, right now. You know, we'll pay for the shipping to you. We'll pay for the handling. There's nothing. All you have to do is go to relevantradio.com and say you want it. Relevantradio.com. Go there and say you want it, or go on to your mobile app and order it there. Put it in the info, and we'll send it right to you. Put in that address you want it to go to. Boom. It's going to be there. I'll tell you, Satan did not want this book out. And I've got a story to share with you a little bit later. Later in the hour, I want to talk about, later in the show, I want to talk about spiritual warfare. I had a weird experience today. Oh, man. And it has to do with the chaplet. One of my colleagues had a weird experience here while he was working on this chaplet element. One of the girls here. Look, when Satan hates divine mercy with a passion. He cannot stand divine mercy. He hates it. Because that's what Christ did, you know? Christ redeemed us. God's mercy prevailed. Satan's head was crushed. And I'll tell you what, Satan does not want you to get this book. He doesn't want the person on their deathbed reading about the chaplet and understanding the promises that were given. This is a book that will help you learn to trust God even deeper. It talks about the power and the secrets of trust. It's a book that talks about the Great Feast of Mercy and everything that you need to know about it. It's all there. You know, what do you have to do? What did the Lord specifically say? Oh, the other thing I put in this book for you too, which is super cool. And again, it's free. Okay, absolutely free. Here's the other thing I put in for you. I put in a bunch of prayers in the end of the book. Some of my favorites that relate to divine mercy. You know, there's this beautiful surrender prayer I put in there. Those beautiful prayers I pray at the end of the chaplet. I put the chaplet in there. So if you say, I don't know how to pray the chaplet, it's right there. Use this book. If you want to share it with somebody else, you want to say hey to your daughter or somebody else in a tough time, maybe in their hospital right now, here, read this book. In the back are all these prayers. Pray these prayers. Plus, and I'll talk about this maybe next week, the image of divine mercy is extraordinary. Unbelievable. You should have it, and I'm going to give you one. That image is in this book as well, okay? But here's what you got to do. Don't call, okay? Please do not call. I was talking to Rose and to Suzanne. I want to thank both of them for taking bullets, you know, because we had phones lit up for these girls. You can't get it that way. And Patrick's on the phones, he said, or the studio right now to order. If you want to order it and you're having trouble, have somebody else do it for you, okay? I mean, let them get online and order it for you. But, you know, just simple. Just go online, go to relevantradio.com, relevantradio.com, and order it. You'll be done. I heard Cyrus Simcoe today tell me he did it in 15 seconds. I think it's a little fast. Took me, you know, it'd probably take a little bit longer than that, but you can do it that way or use your mobile app, okay? So relevantradio.com. Free, you should get it as soon as possible, okay? That's all I've got to say. Get it as soon as possible. You know, a lot of people worried they're not going to get it. You will get it. I promise you that. It's absolutely free. I'll talk to you more about it a little bit later. But I got to take a short break here. We got a lot more coming up, so I hope you will stay with me. As always, I try to give you a look at life you're not going to find anywhere else. And, of course, we'll pray the chaplet together in just a minute.
The voice of reason for our nation. It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Once we arrive to the offertory, it's our turn to give something to God. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 21st Lenten lesson on the Mass. After the prayers of the faithful, the Mass enters into a new and profound phase, the ritual of offering and sacrifice. Pay attention because a lot is going on. The ministers place the corporal, the purificator, the chalice, the pall, and the missal on the altar. If this were a meal, the table is now set, but this is not a meal. It's a sacrifice, and the sacrifice is ready to begin. Members of the faithful can offer their sacrifice. Typically on Sundays, a collection is taken up. That monetary sacrifice is real, but also symbolic of what we hope is a deeper reality, the readiness to sacrifice our hearts, minds, souls, and bodies for the love of God.
Mass with Father Rocky, noon central.
And join us for class after Mass. Hi, I'm Cale Clark. It's The Faith Explained, 12:30 central every day on Relevant Radio.
Your daily dose of faith, hope, and charity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, hey, thanks. Thanks for writing to me, too. Stay with me. 30 minutes from now, we will pray the chaplet. Tell others about it, too, okay? Please do that. Spread the good news. Share on social. I came across a story. Look, I really believe one of the greatest threats to our country today is our embracement of the culture of death. Bar none, nothing calls down the justice of God than what we are now doing to the most innocent amongst us. And wait to hear the story. Oh, my Lord, have mercy. I'm going to call upon Our Lady of Guadalupe for this one. And I'm going to ask you to pray to her. Maybe you can pray a rosary today. Yeah, maybe you can invoke Our Lady. That'd be a nice penitential act during this Lenten season. Maybe turn to her and say, hey, look, we need your help. Let me fill you in on this story, okay? And again, I'm trying to give you a look at stories, at news, at issues, events that you might not get somewhere else. On Wednesday, I shared with you something called woke math. A lot of people are talking about that because it's just so wacky, right? If you missed that, that's where educators are substituting regular examples for math, like, you know, two apples plus another two apples equals four apples, okay? And they do this. They change it with politically correct examples. So take the apples out. Well, you know, two apples plus two apples equals four. And they say something like, yeah, they're tying race into this. I don't want to go down this path because we already talked about it, but you know, there are some educators who are going so far as to question as to whether or not they can actually get correct answers in math, which are considering, you know, one of the most objectives of the sciences. You know, and I don't want to go down this path. We've already talked about it. If you missed it 2 days ago, I had a great conversation on this. But I'm willing to bet you, I'm willing to bet the bank, you know, that you haven't overdrawn your account, you know, by, let's say, $150 because you can't get the correct answers with math, right? Right? Yeah, I mean, math is pretty straightforward. You got $200 in and you spend $200, you got nothing, right? If you have $200 in the bank and you spend $350, you're in the hole $150. I mean, the math is simple, any way you want to do it. So, well, it's getting worse in California. The State Board of Education is going to vote on a new curriculum in ethics studies next week. And what's being proposed is disturbing. And this was reported by Christopher Rufo. He's the director of the Discovery Institute Center on Wealth and Poverty. And I saw this in the City Journal. And look, this is not fake news, okay? Some people may think it is. What this curriculum does is blame Christianity, blame whites for all the problems on the American continent. According to its creator, before the arrival of Christopher Columbus, everything was fine in the Americas, right? The indigenous people were getting along quite well, just doing their things with their gods and each other. Then white men arrived, and it all went out the window. In fact, the curriculum says that Christians committed theocide, killing the native gods. But that's not all. Okay, you might say, okay, well, I agree with that. What's wrong with it? Okay, that's bad enough. But listen to this. Here's what's really worse, far worse. The curriculum now has teachers leading the kids in chants to Aztec gods of human sacrifice and war. Now, I spoke to Dr. Teresa Farnan a couple days ago. And we talked about what was happening in our schools. We talked about how they are really trying to attack the family, why they're targeting the next generation. This should disturb you. It disturbs me. If my child went to school and a teacher said, okay, kids, now we're going to lead a chant to the Aztec god of human sacrifice and war, I'd be through that door in a heartbeat. My child is not going to chant to some demonic god. Not going to worship some false deity. It's not going to invoke the god of sacrifice and war. Not going to invoke Moloch. Not going to invoke Satan. That's really what's behind this. I kid you not. This is really what's happening. Now, this obviously has First Amendment issues, very much like teachers leading their students in Muslim prayer and submission to Allah. But this is what's going on in our schools. From woke math to chants that worship the gods of sacrifice and war. I've invited back again Dr. Teresa Farnan, author and moral philosopher. And they said she specializes in virtue ethics and moral education and a whole litany of other things. She wrote a book called Get Out Now, and it makes a great case for why you should pull your child from public school before it's too late. And it's well worth a read, especially if you've got kids going into school or you're concerned about what they're learning. But she also has a website. And this is a phenomenal resource. I spoke to her just before going live here with you. And she said, Drew, you know what? Person and identity, this is a phenomenal resource for exactly what we're talking about. So she's back with me again today. Doctor, it's good to have you with me. Welcome.
Hey, thank you so much, Drew. Thanks for having me on again.
This is wacky. I mean, I'm telling you, I'd be furious if I found out some teacher was telling my child to worship some sort of false god. But, you know, it's getting to the point where it doesn't surprise me anymore. You know, we talked woke math before. You've seen a lot of this. You probably know more than I do about these types of things that are going on in schools. But this seems like the ultimate bad move that a school can make. I mean, how do you lead a kid in a chant to a pagan deity when you can't even say the Pledge of Allegiance? You can't pray to the real God in the classroom. That, to me, is bizarre. But I'd love your thoughts.
Yeah, there's so many aspects to the story. A couple of points to make just right off the bat. This is a story taking place in California, but parents all over the country need to pay attention, because what happens in California is quickly imported to the rest of the country, as we saw with the LGBT history that started first in California, then spread to Illinois and to New Jersey, and is being picked up by other public school systems around the country. So California, because it's one of the largest public school systems, systems tends to set the trends for the rest of the country. And while this is a particular curriculum, this material is going to find its way into history textbooks and history curricula that are going to be used all across the country. So this is not just a California story. This is a story for our country, and it is gravely concerning. A couple of other points about this story. This story, it is really fascinating because it weaves together both the anti-American undercurrent. It's not even an undercurrent. Now it's very open and out in the public, with between the 1619 curriculum that's being pushed on the East Coast and now this ethnic studies curriculum being pushed on the West Coast. What do you see? You see in our country the contribution of the Judeo-Christian foundings of the United States of America and the work that all the missionaries have done in the United States are being discredited and cast as a form of oppression and colonialism. So right. Christianity itself becomes an oppression. And this is why one of the first statues to be targeted out in the riots in California was the statue of Junipero Serra. Yeah. Because, again, he represents this what is now being cast as a form of oppression. But here, front and center, what we see is the displacement of Christian religion. And this was inevitable when the public schools went into becoming a school system that was marked by secular humanism or the absence of God. They pushed God deliberately out of the public square, and it's been a battle since the 1960s, but that leaves a void. So what comes in to take its place? Now we're seeing prayers to gods of human sacrifice and all kinds of neo-pagan rituals coming in. We've seen this all across the country, not just with children being forced to pray Muslim prayers, but I'll tell you what, one of the big things in public schools is mindfulness, and they have children adopting poses of Buddhist and other practitioners of yoga where you bring in the religious element by bringing in the chants. So none of this is surprising. It is a critical moment, and given the fact that this is now up for consideration, but in the state of California and hasn't yet become law. Now is the time Californians need to speak and weigh in, because once this passes, there's no stopping it.
Wow. My guest, Dr. Teresa Farnan. If you want to join us, I only have her for a few minutes today, but I'll open the phones. You can dial in now at 888-914-9149. We always love to hear from you. 888-914-9149. You counseled in the book that you co-authored with Mary Rice Hassan. I've had her on, another one of my favorite guests. I love her. Exactly what the title says. You're supposed to get your children out of public schools now. I mean, what about the parents? I know that is a haunting title, because there are some parents who says, like, I can't homeschool my kids. We both work. We can't afford private education or Catholic education. I mean, it's unreachable for many people. What's the solution for parents?
Yeah, this is unfortunately, as we've seen throughout this year, where the pandemic really unmasked a lot, because not only in the sense that the teachers' unions prioritized their the teachers' right. well-being over student well-being, as we've seen in all these school districts that refused to open. But there was an interesting thread circulating online by some teachers talking about how the problems of instruction over Zoom posed because parents were actually able to hear what they were teaching their kids. And so until it was shut down because parents caught wind of the thread, there was a very frank discussion among teachers on Twitter of all of the ways that they try to subvert and undermine parents. You're right. It is in some ways overwhelming for parents, because I know there are financial considerations. We certainly, it's been a long haul putting all of our kids through Catholic schools. But the title of our book and the point of our book is not just to place an imperative on individual parents, but right. to awaken a sense of responsibility in the rest of us, that yeah. If your kids are grown, you have a communal responsibility to our country and to the rest of the church to help yes. someone else get their kids into Catholic school and get them through. And if you're a That's parent awesome. Who's struggling with the cost of tuition, go to your school, your Catholic school system. There's EITC money, there are bridge loans, there are bridge grants, things like that. And I know our yeah. school systems are working heroically to try to get kids in.
And to that point, that's such a great point, because unless you ask, you'll never know, right? For example, I know one Catholic school in our area here, very good Catholic school. They're a high school. You know, tuition would be whatever it is, X. But if you have, you know, one kid, it's the full price. If you have a second kid, it might be the full price. But the third kid, you know, I think is free, and the fourth kid is free or whatever. So after you meet a certain criteria, okay, now you're sending your four kids to school for half price, basically. So you don't know. Or they might say, hey, we've got some money set aside, or, hey, we can work this out. So I do think, look, we're the primary educators of our children, and to your point, we should do our part. And this is an issue that I think churches and communities should look at to see how can we help the faithful, make sure that these kids are well-formed, because they're the future legislators. They're the future presidents. They're the future senators and writers and actors and all the people that influence both culture and legislation in this country. And we need well-formed minds for that. That's for sure. All right. My guest today, Dr. Teresa Farnan. If you want to join us, I'll go to the phones. I have her, like I said, just for a few moments today. Teresa is listening in Scottsdale, Arizona. Teresa, thanks for calling in.
Hi. I was just listening, and I heard what you said about California, and I had told your receptionist that the chanting and all that is just as insulting to the Mayan religion as it would be to anyone else whose religion was being imitated as some kind of play, you might say.
Right.
It makes no sense to do that, and then ultimately they should discuss, you know, if they were actually going to be historically accurate. And I'm Native American, and I did take a lot of studies in this field. They should go into the history of how Native Americans, we did war with each other. We did have slavery.
Mm-hmm.
We did all of that.
Right.
And
right.
Ultimately, the unification was through things like the missionaries, the Catholic Church,
right.
And ultimately Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Thank you, Teresa. Let me let the doctor respond. We should talk about Our Lady of Guadalupe, too, as a solution. But go ahead, doctor. You heard her point.
Oh, yeah. Spot on. That was such a great comment. If anyone else were doing this, we would be charged with cultural appropriation, right? Because
yeah,
to have all of these kids who are not, you know, members of indigenous people's chanting Aztec chants, this would be something where we'd be on the hot seat for appropriating these indigenous cultures.
Exactly.
But to that point, your point about Our Lady of Guadalupe is so accurate, because here's the thing: when Christianity comes in and is enculturated in a new civilization, it draws out the best but brings the truth, right? And so it doesn't mean that you leave behind, you know, your background and your heritage as someone who's a member of one of these indigenous peoples, but it means that the things that are not of God are purified out of it. And I can't even imagine that anyone who was, you know, a descendant of these early Aztecs would be advocating a return to human sacrifice. So this to me is, you know, indicates again just how far left our progressive educators are, and how they're really intent on displacing Christianity. A new anthropology with the language and the portrayal of the person that we see in all of the transgenderism that they're trying to push into the schools. And now with this, with trying to substitute all kinds of other deities that may have been worshipped historically, but that in no way are, you know, even are still in you know, in any way, they don't bring truth to our culture, and they certainly don't bring any kind of sense of the dignity and value of human life. It has to be opposed. If you're in California, if you're around wherever you are, if this comes to your area, we must fight this.
Amen to that. All right, I have to take a short pause here, doctor. Hang out with me, okay? When we come back, we'll grab a few more calls. And we should talk a little bit about Our Lady of Guadalupe, too. I often think of these Aztec chants to these Aztec deities. If you don't know the history in terms of what happened in 1531. Stay with me. I'll fill you in on that briefly. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be back with you. Thanks. Yeah, we'll be praying in about 10 minutes or so, 12 minutes. I'd love to pray with you if you have a special need or you want to tap into the prayer army, if you will. I just can't imagine having thousands and thousands of people are all praying together, petitioning God as a family, and you're part of that. It's great to have you here. Also, I published a brand new book. I'm giving it away free. Relevant Radio and I, we discussed that. We're even going to pay for the shipping and handling. It's on Divine Mercy. And if you are new to it or if you are intrigued by it, I'll tell you what, you'll love it. The book, Patrick, you say, what's the title? The title is Divine Mercy. All right, simple. All right, so you can check it out. All yours free. Just go to relevantradio.com and please share it with others. Put them on your social media. We're going to put it on our Twitter. You can also go ahead and use your mobile app to get that book. But I'll tell you more about it coming up in a little bit. Right now, if you are just joining me, I'm having a conversation about worshiping Aztec gods in California classrooms. you know, I don't mean to laugh, but that's crazy. That's bizarre. I mean, really? You can't say the Pledge of Allegiance, but I'll tell you what they want to do is have kids, you know, chant to the gods of war and death. You know, it's wrong, is what it fundamentally is. And when I heard about this, when I think about chants to Aztec gods of human sacrifice and war, I thought it would happen in 1531 when the Aztecs, of course, they were worshiping false gods. And they performed human sacrifice. They would cut a person's heart out while they were still alive. They'd watch it as it still was beating. I mean, they murdered and sacrificed untold numbers of people. But what happened? In 1531, the Mother of God, she comes under this title of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And she does exactly what Scripture tells us in Genesis. She crushes the head of the serpent, of the evil one. He strikes at her heel, but she crushes his head. And she vanquished. We saw with the conquistadors that would soon come in, with the Christian faith, the Catholic faith coming in, 9 million Aztecs converted to the Catholic faith because of Our Lady of Guadalupe and this incredible apparition that she had to Juan Diego. You know, the Protestant Reformation had been going on in Europe, and we had lost millions. And it's funny how God works. He kind of balances the scales, doesn't he? So today in our culture, when the Virgin Mary appeared in Mexico City, when she appeared in Tepeyac, the apparition site, if you look at a map, it's actually the geocenter of the Americas, north and south, in the geocenter of it. And that's not by coincidence. I really believe God intended that. So as she vanquished the culture of death, you know, 400 years ago, 500 years ago, she's our patroness. She's the patroness of this great nation, this great land. She's our mother. Let's turn to her that we can get these issues right. You know, we can get this deception out of our classrooms, out of our culture, that life can be upheld and respected. And doctor, I love the fact that, you know, the last caller talked about Guadalupe because I think she's just so on the money. Let me go to phones. We'll grab a couple more calls. Madonna is listening in Burbridge, Illinois. Madonna, welcome.
No, thank you, Drew. And thank you, Dr. Farnan. I was a student at Notre Dame Law School and you're your father. And you and Mary and all of your siblings are his greatest legacy, and
wow.
Your mom.
Wow.
But, you know, his friend and colleague, of course, you'd know very well, Professor Murphy, used to say that if a people don't agree on first principles, there's really no constitution or governmental system or body of legislation that can keep them together.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find yourself at all, you know, given the lack of consensus on first principles in this country, do you find yourself very optimistic about, you know, about its ability to go forward?
Such a great question.
Oh, yeah.
That's the winner today. That's awesome.
Well, we're not called to have optimism. We're called to have hope, right? And hope is the achievement of
it. That's true.
Trusting in God's power, even when things seem humanly impossible. So I do think it's very daunting because our kids are being taught a whole different language about the person. They're taught a whole different anthropology, that there's no longer male or female, and, you know, the family has been deconstructed. These kids who are being trained as activists in these with these ethnic studies curricula or this 1619 curriculum, they know nothing about the founding of our country. They know nothing about our principles, but they're being trained to be activists anyway, and it's there's really just a void where they're being groomed to be social justice warriors. But I will say I in some ways the pandemic has been so hard for everybody, but what it did do was it got kids out of public school classrooms. It is a detriment to their education, no doubt, and that is a human tragedy. But perhaps this can break the hold, the stranglehold that the big education has on the education of our children. And I, you know, we have to look to God for hope.
Amen.
And these the principles that underlie the founding of our country, the principles of our faith, these first principles are principles that are true because of reason. And so at the end of the day, you know, it's going to make it harder for these kids who don't believe in them, but at some point reason, we hope, will win out. And that's when we have to be ready to offer the truth to these young people.
I love it. And, you know, for those who are despondent over the direction that countries have having, you know, evil collapses on itself. It never can stand. In the end, good always triumphs. And I think you're right. You know, we are a nation divided if we have lost those first principles. But, you know, there's a lot of good people out there like you, Doctor, like Relevant Radio, like others that are teaching truth and planting those seeds. And it goes back to, you know, what you and I have talked about a couple times now, why we need to really take the responsibility of raising this next generation correctly, you know, and doing our part. Let's get another call or two in before I run out of time. Atlanta, Georgia, John's been waiting to join us. John, good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. I just wanted to say that it will encourage everyone to run for school board with the critical race theory. I think it's very important. I mean, yeah. I do agree. If you can pull your kids out of the government schools to do that, but also I think people should be encouraged to run for local school boards.
All right, it's a great suggestion. So, Doctor, to that point, not just parents being the primary educators and teaching their kids, but we need to get involved in the process. We can't sit on the sidelines, and I love that, at even those very basic levels. I think that's a great point. Do you want to respond to John?
Yeah, I agree. I think even if you don't have your kids in the public schools, you have an obligation to the kids who are trapped there, whether they're trapped by financial considerations or maybe their family has some personal reasons why they need to have their kids in the public schools. But I do want to call because a school board, even the most conservative school board, you know, we're up against pretty significant headwinds. And I'll give you an example here in the Pittsburgh area. One of our public school systems attempted to come up with a reasonable compromise on on the gender and bathrooms for kids who are struggling with confusion. And Lambda Legal sued them and won, right? So to a certain extent, you have to be in there fighting. I'm not saying don't run for school board, but I think we need to be realistic, and that realism needs to inform our choices about our own children and extend that charity to trying to get as many other kids right now immediately out of the public school system, because I also think some healthy competition might leverage and change.
You're right. Well, look, the book that Dr. Farnan wrote is Get Out Now, Why You Should Pull Your Kids or Why You Should Pull Your Child from Public School Before It's Too Late. She co-authored that. You co-authored that with Mary Rice Hassan, right?
Yes, I did.
All right, and what a wonderful person. Just check out personandidentity.com, too. That's a website with a lot of great resources and will be a blessing. Hey, I know we just talked a couple days ago. I'm glad to have you back so quick, and hopefully we'll talk again real soon. All right, Doc?
All right. Thanks, Drew.
Always Bye-bye. Good to have you. That's Dr. Teresa Farnan. personandidentity.com. Check that out, and we'll try to make that available to you, too. That's her website, and she says you'll be glad you checked it out. Lots of great writings and resources. There was an exorcist that I was reading about. I only have a minute left here, so I really can't tell you the story, who was involved with a woman who had a spirit and couldn't get rid of it. And she had been involved in the culture of death. She had this abortion. Satan kept, you know, blaming her and telling her she'd never be forgiven. And it was only until they really invoked Our Lady of Guadalupe in this exorcism that demon was able to be broken. But I'll fill you in all the details of that story. It's a fascinating one. I always love those. We see the power of Our Lady so often in spiritual warfare. And that's what we're in today in this culture. So let's invoke her intercession daily for our country under the title of the Immaculate Conception. That's her official title here for our nation. Also Our Lady of Guadalupe, in which she appeared in the Geo Center of the Americas. Hey, we're going to pray the chaplet. After that, Dr. Brian Thatcher is going to be joining me. He had a child that drowned. And I want him to share the story with you. It's a powerful story. And the chaplet really came through in a miraculous way. I'll tell you all about that coming up. I've got a new book out. If you missed it, it's yours, and it's free. And I'd recommend that you go now and get it. Go to relevantradio.com and just say, I want Drew's free book. We're going to pay for everything. Relevant Radio and I said, look, no price on this book. I don't want to charge for it. We want to give it away. And Relevant says we're going to pick up the shipping and handling charges. So that means you know, a lot of work went into this. And this is, I think, really a great spiritual treasure. It belongs in your spiritual library. You know, I always say you need the catechism and you need the Bible. Those are the absolute musts. And then I got a litany of others, you know, that belong in there too. This is one that will be a treasure to whoever has it. And I want you to have it. So please go. RelevantRadio.com. RelevantRadio.com. Go now. It'll just take a couple seconds, and then the book will be in the mail and on the way to you in the not-too-distant future. Everyone who wants it will get it. I know some people are concerned, oh, I'm not going to get it. You'll get it, but you got to go sign up, okay? Or use the mobile app at relevantradio.com is the web address, or download the mobile app on any of the platforms, and you can do that, all right? When we come back, we'll pray the chaplet, and this book will tell you everything you need to know about it and a whole lot more. I share some very personal stories in it. I'll be right back.